Welcome back. This is Mia Zachary, and you're listening to Elemental Abundance, the casual conversations that I have with my friends about quantum thinking. It is another gorgeous day here at Village Connector Media. The sun is shining, the smiles are bright, and abundance is flowing around all of us, because that's what happens when you put like-minded people in a room together. Today, I have the honor of sharing this room, Studio B, with my friend and my mentor, Mr. Trevor Ottz. Thank you so much for making time to come and have this conversation with me today.
Wow, this is Studio B. I thought it was just a room with some padded walls and a few microphones. But
hey, don't ruin the picture. It's a beautiful day.
We're in Studio B, folks.
You don't have to tell them there's no windows. You know, Trevor, the reason that I wanted to invite you here today is because none of this would have been possible without you. We met on my birthday 2 years ago, and at that time, if you had told me that I would have a podcast or do any of the other things I've done over the last year and a half, I would have thought you were absolutely crazy. So thank you. Thank you so much for seeing something more in me that I didn't even recognize myself.
Well, one, that's my pleasure, and I think you know, as I'm sitting here thinking about it, I think that one of the fundamental responsibilities for all coaches and trainers and speakers and people who really work with people is I think we have to understand what happens when we get blessed with somebody coming into our space. And for me, when people come into our space or come into our place, I realize that it's just like going to the bank. When you get some money or you get a check in, or you probably got a lot of checks in over with the work you're doing with Elemental Abundance, but when you get money that comes in, you normally take that money and you put it in a bank. And the reason why you take the money to the bank is because you expect the bank to, one, keep your money safe. You expect the bank to keep your money secure. And also you hope that the bank will return your money back to you with a profit. But you put it there for those three reasons. And at some point, you expect to return to the bank to withdraw that which you put into their bank to keep safe, to keep secure, and to return unto you with a profit. And so people are the same way, is that oftentimes when they deal with you as a coach or as a trainer or somebody that they trust to consult them, they are really depositing into your business infrastructure, their beliefs, their dreams, their ambitions, the things that they really want to do with their life and in their business. And there will come a time where they'll return to you to withdraw. And I think that especially for small business owners and entrepreneurs is that with it being so many ups and so many downs and so many tough times that's just the going through the process. We're not even talking about the friends and the family members that are going to tell you, quit, don't stop, why are you doing this? You're absolutely insane. And all of the different naysayers and challenges that you'll run across in your life and in your business. And so it becomes important for them to be able to deposit that belief, that dream, that aspiration, so that when they hit those tough times, they can come to you as their coach, come to you as their trainer, their consultant, their friend, their wise counsel, and you remind them that, hey, Trevor Ottz holds the belief for you that you will be an amazing life coach, that Glenn Garns holds the belief for you that you will do amazing things in your small business, that Mia Zachary is here and she holds the belief for you that you will change lives through the things that you do. And so when they return, they should return to something you kept safe with them. So when I met you 2 years ago, you deposited here within our business infrastructure, the Peak Performance Institute, I had to say that. But you deposited your dreams, your aspirations, the things that you wanted to do. And my job is to, one, make sure to keep it safe, two, to keep it secure, but to also return it to you with a profit. And I think this podcast is really a return on that which you invested.
I love that. I love that. You know, when most people think about the word value, you know, their heads go right to the money. That, you know, value is an estimate of, you know, monetary worth. But I love the fact that you brought up the concept of holding belief for someone, because that really is so much more important and what I really wanted to focus on. One thing that I really like about you is, number one, you're brilliant. But number two, you're generous with your brilliance. I love the fact that you are always talking about the giver's economy. So what does that actually mean? Because everybody's going to have a different concept. So for people out there listening, they're like, what the heck is a giver's economy? I'm not even an entrepreneur. All I want to do is make my life better. But what I'd love to have a conversation with you about is the fact that the giver's economy isn't just for business. It's for all of us who are building relationships.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be important to note that I went through some transitions myself as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, as a professional, and I've been in a lot of different industries, and I've actually made a lot of money in those industries. And I guess around about 2014, I came to this realization that there was really something broken about this entrepreneurship model, that there was really something broken about our approach to it, and I decided to leave the world of becoming an entrepreneur, and I decided that I wanted to become an impactpreneur. And the impactpreneur is a little different. The impactpreneur is focused on the belief that they can make a difference and make a profit at the same time. And sometimes when we get in business, we can start to feel that that bottom line, that staying in the black, is more important than making an impact. And so, you know, I came up with this idea, like, hey, I'm going to become an impactpreneur. And then I said, well, what does an impactpreneur believe? And so here's what an impactpreneur believes. An impactpreneur believes that the person who outgives the competition out-earns the competition. And we started looking for ways to really quantify that. It was a theory, just like science class, where you have this theory and you have to test it. I remember with my science fair project, you have a son, and so I'm sure you've stayed up many nights doing the science fair project.
Oh, heck no. I make my ex-husband do that.
You have to start with the theory, then you have to prove the theory. So I started looking for business models that actually use giving as a fundamental piece of their business plan. And I realized that many professionals lack what I call a giver strategy. And so I looked at companies like Google, and I looked at the genesis of their business. And they created, as you know, this search engine that was free. And during the time that Google came into the market, many of the features that they gave away for free, you had to pay for with other companies like Kuppernick and AOL. If you wanted that in depth of a search algorithm, you really had to pay for it. And along comes Google, and they say, we're going to just give this thing away. And literally within a couple of years, they became the dominant force on the internet. And after time, they became the world's most widely used internet resource. And how did they do that? Well, they did that by really giving away something of value. And they decided that they would be the first to give value. And that became a fundamental shift in how people did business. Prior to that, the belief was, first they give me something of value, their money, and then I give them something of value. And the poor customer had no way of knowing what the true value of what they were getting. And it had to depend on hype and marketing, and you hope that what you got was worth what you paid for. And so I really love Google's model. But interestingly enough, we studied it out when it went to when we dealt with Apple. And Apple, they created this iPhone, and everybody had the iPhone. And I remember all of the companies that iPhone or Apple put out of business. And once they came into the marketplace, Apple was a juggernaut. I mean, for all sakes and purposes, they put out of business Siemens, Nokia, BlackBerry, Microsoft. These were all dominant forces in the cell phone industry. And they became so dominant that Microsoft started lowering the price of their phones. Nokia started lowering the price of their phones. Eventually, they still couldn't conquer Apple, and so Nokia and Microsoft joined forces, and they still couldn't beat Apple. And along comes Google. Never made a phone in their life. No phone ever made. And they come out and they say, we're going to create an operating system. We're going to call it Android. We're going to give it away. What a novel concept. And literally, in less than 18 months, they became the most widely used operating systems on phones in the United States. Yeah, in a three-year period, they became the most dominantly used operating system on cell phones all around the world because the person who outgives the competition out-earns the competition. And one of the things that we have to be careful of is sometimes the things we do as people can become trendy. And it's almost like what you hear on the radio. And you can think that the things that you see the most of in the media is the truest representation of what's going on in the world. And so for years, we just saw companies and professionals really operating from the perspective that I needed to sell first and service later. I need to sell first and get value later. And what I really like now is that with the advent of the internet, the world is changing. The customer is expecting you to give value first. And then they are really showing respect for the value that you provide by supporting your businesses, and not just businesses, supporting the different events and things that you do. And they show up in different places in different spaces. So the giver's economy is really all about using giving as a strategy within your business model. I go to Pentagon City a lot, and in Pentagon City, it's like any mall in America. They got
a food court. For those of you who are outside the area, Pentagon City is close to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and then it has a food court, and it's like any mall in America. And usually around about 12 o'clock, midday, you go downstairs. When you get downstairs, you see all of these different food choices. It's like, ooh, there's Annie's pretzels over there. And I was like, oh, maybe I should have a pretzel. Or then you see the Popeye's chicken. It's like, oh, I shouldn't eat Popeye's chicken. It's probably too greasy. But maybe. Then you see the McDonald's, and then you have to have a Sbarro's pizza. And then you see Sbarro's pizza. And then you see Five Guys. And you have all of these choices, and you're literally bombarded with all of these choices that you have to make, and you get confused. But generally, you will see somebody standing around with a tray with chicken on a toothpick. And they say, would you like a sample? And I say, sure. And they get me every time. I don't know why they get me every time. I go down and say, okay, I'm going to make a choice. Then they give me the chicken on the toothpick. I taste it. And then they point me in the direction of where I can get more of that. And that company is Bourbon Chicken. And the interesting story about Bourbon Chicken is they don't run television ads. They don't run radio ads, and yet you see them in malls all around America. And at the end of the day, they're not in malls all around America because they're not profitable. They're in malls all around America because they are profitable, and they run a giver's model. And by running a giver's model, they're not just giving for the sake of giving. They know when they should give. We know that lunch starts at 12 o'clock. So at 11:30, they're strategically positioned to start giving value at the time when people will most likely need it. Sometimes we have people out there giving, and they're not strategically giving. They're just giving when they feel like it. Oh, I feel like giving. I feel like, well, there was a guy on the street. He asked me for a dollar. I gave it to him. But you need to have a really strategic giving model. In addition to that, they actually have it proportioned. So they didn't give away a whole plate of chicken with rice and all the kind of good stuff that comes on it. I'm really getting hungry now, jeez. But but they gave away just enough for you to understand the value that they bring to the market. And sometimes when we see professionals and people who really have service built into their heart, they give away too much of their content, too much of their knowledge, and they give away so much that there's no reason for the person to come back. And it's almost like they give you with the fire hose. It's sort of like you say, hey, I'm really thirsty. I would like some water. I turn the fire hose on and I blast it in your face. You might get wet, but you're going to drink very little water.
Right.
And so the giving has to be strategic. And the giver's economy is about adding into your motto as a person, as a business owner, as a professional. It's about adding in a plan in which you strategically give the right amount of something, and you strategically give at the right time that is going to benefit the person who is likely going to be interested in a product, a service, a mission, or a brand that you're offering. And so that's what the Giver's Economy is all about, and it started to evolve online.
Cool.
We saw it evolve online, and here's what we realized. We realized that online, that there was a value to giving, and we started to assign, figure out and assign the value proposition. So we gave away free books, and in return, somebody would give us their information. And we realized that the average value of the information that a person gave us in order to get the free book or the free online gift was $1.15 per person per month. This is really key, by the way. This is some good stuff. I'm going to give you some secret knowledge.
For all of those people out there who are actually interested in business or entrepreneurs, you are actually getting a miniature masterclass right now from the marketing guru himself.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say just people who are in business. For nonprofits also, because the only difference between a nonprofit and a for-profit business is really how they allocate the funds.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're a local church. Doesn't matter whether you're an author, it doesn't matter if you're a professional. One of the things that I've learned that no matter who has the vision, whether it's an entrepreneur or whether it's just somebody at home with an idea, you got to be able to fund the vision. Mm-hmm. All visions need some type of resource to keep that thing moving, to keep that thing going. And you as a person are a very limited resource. So you have to be able to fund it. So we gave away these gifts online. Let's just say, Mia, you have this book. You give away a book online. And you say, in return for the information, or in return for this book, I'm going to give you this information. And you give them the book, and they give you their information. They give you their first name. They give you their last name. They give you their email address. They give you their cell phone number. And we started to quantify what was the value of that information. We realized that the value was $1.15 per person per month. And this is key. So then I went back and I looked at my revenue goals. And the reason why my revenue goals didn't work is you should have a revenue goal as an entrepreneur. But as an impactpreneur, having a revenue goal doesn't work. It's completely out of line and out of harmony. And so I said, well, I want to make $120,000 a year. Well, here's the question. How do you make $120,000 a year by giving? That's a really interesting conundrum. I'm going to give out a give, and in my giving, I'm going to generate $120,000 a year. And we had to solve the problem. And it was contrary to my normal business logic. I had to become a real person, and that's what the conversation is about, becoming a real person, giving value to others, giving value to the community, and thus giving value to the world. So going back to the value of the information the person gave me, it was worth $1.15 per person per month, or about a dollar a month per person for each set of information I collected from an individual. Well, I said, well, if I wanted to make $120,000 a year through giving, what I needed to do was I needed to figure out how much of a particular gift I needed to give away. So here's what I did. I figured out how much I needed to make a month. So I divided $120,000 by 12 months in a year. And I realized that I needed to generate $10,000 a month to make $120,000 a year. No big deal. And so I said, well, what do I need to do? If I know that each person's information that I get as a result of giving away this book is worth about a dollar a month, my new goal became to give away 10,000 books. But I gave away those books in return for getting somebody's information. And what that gave me was I replaced my revenue goal with my list goal. And so the first phase of transitioning from being an entrepreneur to being an impactpreneur, where I could make a difference and make a profit, was to get rid of the whole concept of having a revenue goal. I don't have revenue goals anymore. I have list goals. And so I scratched through revenue goals, and now my list goal was 10,000, 10,000 people on my list. Now, the only way to get 10,000 unique people on my list was to give away. The only way to get 10,000 new people on my list was to give away.
Cut.
10,000 people on my book. And so I had to give away 10,000 people. I had to give it away to 10,000 people. And what I found was, this was really what was amazing. Do you know that it was just as hard to give away 10,000 books as it was to sell 10,000 books?
Well, that's because value comes at the intersection of people's worldviews. So I'm assuming that what happened was, people are so used to being competitors as opposed to having an abundance mindset that we are collaborators, that they didn't probably understand what you were doing, first and foremost. And number two, people aren't used to getting without giving something first. So you probably had to overcome this silent objection of, wait a minute, where are the strings? When's the other shoe going to drop? This guy's really giving me stuff away for free? Mm-hmm.
So here's the next thing that I learned. The next thing that I learned was that the list goal didn't, having a list goal didn't necessarily make me an impactpreneur, because the whole entrepreneur world was saying, the money is in the list, the money is in the list, the money is in the what? The list. So I was still just like them, but I was just kind of masking it. And so I got rid of my list goal. And once I got rid of my list goal, I then moved to my giver's goal. And so it was this transition, it was this evolution to become an impactpreneur. So at first I had a revenue goal of $120,000 a year. I got rid of it. Then I broke that down to, okay, I have a list goal now, because the money is in the list. And my list goal was get 10,000 people on my list. But then I got rid of that. And then I replaced that with my giver's goal. And I think that every business, I think every professional, I think every person on the planet should have a giver's goal, that you should set out with an intention to give value to a certain number of people every day, every week, every month, and every year. And I think if you ask yourself the question daily or weekly, are you meeting your giver's goal? I think inevitably you become a better person, but I think the world becomes a better person because you are more conscious of how you give value. And the thing is that if you're more conscious on how you give value, my good friend Shay Brown would say this: what gets measured gets managed. And I think that for many of us, we think about giving when it's convenient. Like, it's Christmas. Hey, we got to go give. I'm looking for some guy with a red suit on ringing a bell so I can go give. I've hit my giver's quota for the year. We think of Thanksgiving. We think of giving as something that's more seasonal and more for holidays, as opposed to something that's a part of our daily, everyday lives. So there's not a day that I wake up where I'm not seeking to pour into another person in some way, shape, form, or fashion. And here's what you have to know about having a giver's goal. Everybody has a gift. Everybody has a talent. Everybody has a skill set. Everybody has something of value that they can give to the world. We all do. But the thing that you have to understand about your gift is your gift has a twofold purpose. Your gift is designed to provide for you, number one, and number two, serve others. So the way to be profitable is to really, you'll become profitable in your service of others. So when you serve others through the unique gifts and talents that you have, your gifts will provide for you. So a self-serving person will never profit. And it's important to note here, all success doesn't have a dollar sign on it. All profit doesn't have zeros on the end of it. And it's, you got to be clear about this. So I just believe that, with your gifts, I never focus on whether or not my gift will provide for me. I never wake up. I never worry about this. I'm clear that when I serve others through the use of my gifts, it will provide for me. So here's what I learned, Mia. This is really cool. I've learned that whenever there's a deficit in anybody's life, whether it be a deficit in their business, whether it be a deficit in their relationship, wherever you find a deficit, you will usually find that there is a deficit in their giving. There's something they're not giving enough in a certain area. Maybe they're not giving enough focus. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not investing enough, you know, giving of their resources. Maybe they're not giving enough time. Maybe they're not giving enough attention. But wherever there's a deficit in your life, whether it be as an entrepreneur or an impactpreneur, whether it be as an author, speaker, coach, whether it be as a mom, a dad, a husband, a wife, wherever there's a deficit, you're going to find that there's a lack, that you have a giver's deficit. And so the way that you overcome that is by having a giver's goal. So one of the things that the listeners can do right now is just write at the top of your paper. By the way, if you don't have a pen, this is the time you get a pen, because note takers are money makers and note takers are action takers. And so just write at the top, giver's goal. And then I want you to just, on that sheet of paper, draw a line under giver's goal. And then I want you to draw four columns. So draw a line and draw four columns. Now, once you get these four columns, I would like you to put in each of these columns the four most important things to you in your life. Maybe it's your business. Maybe it's your church. Maybe it's your book. Maybe it's your spouse. Maybe it's your children. Just write down your top four goals. Just write one in each column. What are your top four things or the most important things in your life right now? And then I want you to just, in each column, just write down, what do you have to give more of to have greater success in that area? What do you have to give more of? Because what you want to identify is, where are your deficits? Where are the areas where you can give more? I had to do this. I have a six-year-old son, and his name is Addison Chase. And when I did this exercise, I was floored. Because I realized that I was not giving enough time and attention to the things that mattered in his life. So I bought him everything. I bought him the Nintendo Wii. I bought him, you know, every video game on the planet. I bought him his own Samsung watch. I bought him his own iPhone, tablet.
And he's what, seven?
Yeah, so he has every gift known to man. But I realized that I wasn't giving enough time. I'm taking him to be a part of football games and community activities.
So you were giving him things, but you weren't giving him value as your father.
I had a giver's deficit. Mm-hmm. I had a giver's deficit. I realized that there were a lot of things where little things like just going to the park. So there was a deficit in the way in which I gave my time. And it was creating a problem in the relationship. Mm-hmm. I gave him plenty of things, gave up plenty of money. And so the reason why it's important to put that category and write down what's your giver's goal. So I had a giver's goal, and my goal was to make sure to spend X amount of hours every week in my son's life. And not that I was just trying to get to the goal. My goal was to go above and beyond that. Right. But what gets measured gets managed. And literally, you can see the shift overnight.
And some things can't really be measured. Mm-hmm. I'm in a similar situation where I'm divorced from my son's father. Mm-hmm. And in that household, it's kind of like yours. He gets every single thing he could ever want. So a couple Christmases ago, I was particularly broke.
Oh, join the crew.
Exactly.
I've had a few of those Christmases.
Exactly. So, you know, there was a particular video game that he wanted, and he'd actually asked me for it when it came out in the summer. And at the time, I didn't have it. Did not have the $50 at mm-hmm. that time. But, you know, I decided to, you know, work on my giver's goal mm-hmm. and focus on the value of the gesture and focus on the value of the time as opposed to the thing itself. So when it came Christmas, I mean, his little eyes bugged out of his head to see this game. And he looked at me and he's like, Mom. And I said, yeah, it took me a little while to save for it. But I wanted you to have it so that we can play it together. Now, what's interesting?
You played the
is,
game?
Yeah.
Whoa,
I played the game.
So you had a joystick? And
I did.
Did you play it more than 5 minutes?
Now, they're not a sponsor, so I probably shouldn't give the name, but I will go ahead and say it was the Lego Harry Potter video game, because I love that thing. I love that thing.
Oh, so you played it?
I played it with him. So here's the point, though. He has lost the Wii. He has lost the iPhone multiple times. He's he's outgrown, et cetera, et cetera. But here we are, 3 years later, and he'll still ask if we can play that, because I created value not in how much the game costs, but the time I invested in playing it with him. And that was the only thing he got from me that Christmas. And he valued it more than all of the things that his dad and that side of the family spent on. So I love the fact that, you know, here you are, an incredibly successful businessman. You teach other people how to make money. But at the heart of it, you have allowed me on occasion to see underneath the mask to the heart of the man beneath it. And that is why I value you, is because you have such a huge fill the room. In case you haven't noticed, listeners, if you give Trevor a microphone, he's just going to take it over. And that's okay, because I know how he is and I value you for how you are. But what I really love is the heart of the man that you every now and again will let me glimpse. So I want to take you back someplace. I want to take you back to cold showers and black trash bags. Now, this is a story that not many people know about Trevor Ott's. They see the success. They see the persona. They see the charisma. But it hasn't always been this way for you. And I want to read a quote from Stephen Covey, because it reminds me of you, and that's why I chose it. The key to the ability to change is in a changeless sense of who you are, what you are about, and what you value. Are you willing to share that cold shower and black trash bag story?
Absolutely. I've shared that story with very few people, but you know.
Well, the reason I'm asking is it's about authenticity, and I want people who are listening to know they can go from where you were to where you are. Not necessarily in the same way, everybody has their own journey, but you have inspired me so many times in the time that I've known you. So I'm asking if you would inspire the other people listening.
Absolutely. And the actual quote is dark days, cold showers, and a U-Haul truck. And it's really a chapter in the story of my life. And It was really a tough time. I was heavy into the entrepreneurship world, and
you were in real estate at that time, yeah.
I was in real estate, and the real estate market had crashed. I was still charged with the responsibility, and this is the key: responsibility of still providing homes for people. The market had crashed, and so people were losing their homes, and I was charged with the responsibility of helping people find homes who were losing their homes. And I did not want to forsake my responsibility, so to speak. And so I remember that, you know, the market wasn't good. I wasn't generating a lot of revenue. I was more than robbing Paul to pay Peter. I robbed Paul, John, Susie, Mark, parents, to pay Paul. So, and it was just a really tough time in my life. And I remember after one day I came home and there were just no lights. And I was coming home from the office and there were no lights in my house. So I had to get some candles. And, you know, you would think that that would be the worst of it. So, you know, first they cut off the electricity. And anybody, you know, you get behind on your bills, things start getting cut off. You know, I'm beyond cut the cable off. I'm beyond cut the cell phone off. You get home, the lights are off. And so I went through this for a couple of weeks. And what I did was, instead of seeing that obstacle as something to hold me back, I made it an advantage. And what I did was, you heard the classic quote of take lemons and make lemonade. But what I did was I just said, okay, well, I'm going to stay at the office longer. So during that time frame, I was really my most productive. I would be out of the house at 5 o'clock in the morning. I would get, you know, I would leave the office at 11, 12 o'clock at night. I was literally only going home to sleep.
Well, that hasn't changed throughout the years.
And then, you know, after a little bit of time, I was still trying to, you know, get my feet under me. I came home and eventually they cut the hot water off. So now I'm taking cold showers. And mind you, I'm not taking cold showers in the spring. I'm taking cold showers literally in the winter. And so I'm taking these cold showers, the lights are off, and I still have this image and I have this responsibility to maintain. Now, mind you, I have employees at this time. So this is not a situation where it's just me going to work. I have employees whose lives I'm responsible for. So they pay their bills based upon my ability to pay them. And so, you know, I keep pressing through. I was like, well, this cold water, it just keeps me alive. This is where you really go to the affirmations and you say, you know, some people will call me and I'm like, oh, you sound so pumped up. The reason why I'm so pumped up right now is I'm still in the cold showers. If you want to be pumped up, take a cold shower. I swear, I think I feel the cold showers now. And then I remember that at my most critical point, it's probably the first time, I don't even know if you've heard this part of the story. During this time, I don't know why, but with all of these things going on, I felt the need to extend my responsibility, and I decided to run for public office. This is all happening at the same time. So now I'm running for public office, lights are off, cold, hot water is off, and I'm running for office. And one day, I get home from the office, and I was getting home late, so I didn't come home because, you know, the lights went off, the, you know, no hot water. It was really nothing to do there, so I just went to work. So I got home one night, probably around midnight. And when I got home, all of my stuff was sitting in the yard. Everything I owned was sitting right there. Now, because it had been sitting there for a while, people had already picked through all the stuff. They took the suits. Everything was in black trash bags. The good news is they didn't give me the cheap trash bags. They actually threw my stuff out in
you got the good hefty ones. Yeah,
brand name trash bags. And you know, I just remember just seeing all my stuff there, and I probably was left with maybe 2 to 3 bags worth of usable stuff. The TVs and everything were just gone. And I remember that I had a presentation that I needed to do the next day. I was due for a political debate. And I want you to imagine this. The few clothes that I had left were in a bag. And oh, by the way, it was raining this night.
Mm-mm-mm.
So much of the clothes were soaked. So just imagine the worst day of your life. You come home, all of your stuff is out on the street. Your neighbors are like, oh my gosh, you're at the apex of embarrassment. And you know, it's raining, your stuff is stolen, you're fighting for the people, you're fighting for your workers. I mean, you're fighting. You're like, you're asking yourself, why me? And I had this debate I had to go to, and at this moment, this is the time when you want to quit. I mean, if there's a time that you feel like the world would just give me a pass for quitting, you're right at that moment. So I decided that the next morning I'm going to the debates anyway. I don't have an iron because they took that. Of course, I didn't have money for a hotel, so I had to stay with a friend that night and, you know, got a U-Haul truck. I had to sleep in front of the house to make sure no more of my stuff got stolen. That morning, we got the U-Haul truck. By the way, dark days, cold showers in a U-Haul truck. We packed everything in a U-Haul truck. I got some clothes out of the bag. I got the shirt that was least wrinkled. Now, during this time frame, what was really interesting is Barack Obama was running for office. And during that time frame, I seen him do something where he was on the campaign trail and he would roll his sleeves up on his shirt as though, you know, he was a man of the people. He was a working man. I said, this shirt is pretty wrinkled. Taking lemons and making lemonade. So what I did was I said, I'm going to go with no jacket. I'm going to roll the sleeves up on my shirt. Tuck it in, and I'm going to go in there looking like the working man. And I'll tell you, I gave probably the best overall presentation I've given in my life. Matter of fact, it's on YouTube. I'll have to track that thing down.
Please do. I'd love to be able to give the link for people later.
Yeah, and it was at that moment that I realized, and this is the moment that I want everybody here to realize, is I realized that you can't quit. You can not quit. And if in your mind you're thinking that success was guaranteed to be easy, you're wrong. Success of any type requires a fight. And if a challenge something as small as your ego and your pride, because really, who wants to get embarrassed with something, you know, like an eviction? If you can't hold up to some of the small obstacles, you need to reevaluate what's really important. And you got to understand why you fight. And this is the reason why I said that all success in life doesn't have a dollar sign on the end of it. If I was fighting for the dollar, I would have lost. I'd have gave up. But at the time, I wasn't fighting for a dollar. I was fighting for people who were depending on me, that community of people who I was called to serve through my unique gifts and unique talents.
And also mm-hmm. through your abundant mindset, because the impression I had the first time you told me this story was it didn't matter what was happening to you in the moment. Mm-hmm. You knew in your heart and in your soul that there was more for you, and there was more for you to give, and then therefore there was more for you to do. And I love that about you.
Yeah, and so you got to continue fighting for your dreams. We've seen examples. It would be different if you didn't know that it's possible to overcome obstacles and have extreme success. But how do you say that when you hear stories like Nelson Mandela? And your story is going to pale in comparison to those people who've sacrificed for a vision and sacrificed for a dream. And I think when it comes down to it, you're going to have to get in alignment with who you are and what you're here to do and the vision that you have. And so I'll tell you, you know, I've been through some times. The repo guy used to come to my house so often. I used to know his name. Mr. Ice, you want to give us the keys? You got some stuff in there. Go ahead, get it out. I'm like, okay, I'll be down in about a week to get it. I knew all of the details. I mean, I say that to say is that there's probably somebody listening out there right now. You're struggling. You're thinking about quitting. You're wondering if it's worth it. And I'll tell you this definitively. It's worth it. Live your dreams. Believe in your dreams. And
above all else, know your value. Yep. Know what you give to the world, what you bring to the world, and know that the world would be losing something precious without you.
Yeah. And also, be careful that your dependence on the trappings of this world doesn't cause you to sacrifice your gifts and talents. And sometimes you can think that without cable, the world is going to crash. Without internet, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? You know, if I got to catch the bus, it's raining cats and dogs, the world is going to end. And you got to know that some of the external trappings can sometimes distract you from who you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to be doing. And I would encourage you, once a year I do this. I go through a fast, not just a food fast, but a fast from some of the things that I'm dependent on. I love a laptop. I love an internet connection. Can you imagine what happens when just for a week, no internet? No,
I can't imagine you for an hour. You'd be laying on the floor twitching without your.
And I do twitch, but I think that the thing is when you learn to go without, not just to say just go without because you're trying to prove that you're holier than thou. You know, I took some poverty challenge. No. When you learn to go without, there'll be times when you need to make a result happen in your business, in the lives of others, and in your community, and you won't have all of the quote-unquote tools necessary to make it happen. But any way you cut it, you have a responsibility to get it done. And you got to know how to get it done anyway. And I think that the thing that I would say for everybody that's on the phone today or listening online or listening to the podcast, I would say that the thing I would like everybody to learn is the difference between innovation and invention. During the times when I had no lights.
Wait a minute. Say that one more time. The difference between innovation and invention. Mm-hmm. Ooh, you got my attention.
So during those times in my life, especially during that time, I was the most creative. I innovated at, you know, I was just innovating all the time. I was undistracted. And so to innovate means to see new possibilities in that which already exists. And that's what it means to innovate. To invent means to create something entirely new. And I looked at George Washington Carver as an example of this. He is known as both an innovator and an inventor. And sometimes we get the two mixed up, and they're completely different. So to innovate is to see new possibilities in that which already exists. And it becomes incumbent upon you to learn how to work with what you have. So what happens is you get people who feel like they don't have enough resources, they don't have enough time, they don't have enough money, they don't have enough this. And my question is, what are you doing with what you already have? What are you doing with what you already know? There are things that you have already and things that you know already. But our answer is usually I need whatever the latest trend is. I can't be successful if I don't have a cell phone. I can't be successful if I don't have a website. I can't be successful if I don't have this and this, this and this. You got people now that don't even go to the gym if they don't have the right yoga pants and right tennis shoes. I mean, it gets to be ridiculous. And you get people in the business world who go to conference after conference. They go from coach to coach. They have books on the shelf. They have the greatest collection of shelf help that the world has ever seen. And I would say that it becomes incumbent upon you to really do a knowledge audit, but also a resource audit, and start to see new possibilities in that which already exists.
In other words, find the value that you already have and can offer.
Yeah. And there's a season for innovation in your life where you are charged with, you know, just seeing new possibilities in that which already exists. Think like the child. I remember when I was a child, God knows, the greatest thing that we had as a child were cardboard boxes.
Yeah.
Cardboard boxes and
tree stumps out in the forest
behind
the yard.
And sheets. Because, you know, with sheets, you can make tents.
Yep.
You know, you can make tents.
And capes.
And the best games we didn't even buy. We played Don't Touch the Floor. My mother hated the fact that we jumped around on the couches and we got a few beatings, but it was worth it. We innovated. And there's a season for innovation. See new possibilities in that which already exists. My mother saw a couch and a floor, and she saw a chair. What we saw was a new opportunity to create a new game called Don't Touch the Floor. By the way, I know you've played Don't Touch the Floor out there. And then there's also the need to invent, and there's a season for invention in your business and in your life. And when you go with invention, you think about the mad scientist. And he's kind of sitting in the lab, and he has his coat on, the lab coat on. He has the glasses on. He has these test tubes, and he's pouring stuff in, mixing stuff in, pouring stuff in, mixing stuff. And then eventually, because he's poured so many different things and mixed so many things, something blows up. And I think this is important, that I think that these days we've gotten afraid to experiment with our own success. And the reason why we don't experiment with our own success is because we're afraid that it might blow up. And what happens is we make somebody else's story our story.
What do you mean by that?
We lose our originality.
Okay.
We decide that we want to be like somebody else that we see. We adopt somebody else's vision as our vision for ourselves and our businesses and our mission and the things that we want to do in life, because we feel like if we take on somebody else's plan, that we don't have to experience something blowing up. And here's what I'll tell you. Experiment with your success, because things may blow up or things may blow up. And at the end of the day, you know, how you gonna blow up without a few blow-ups? So I challenge everybody to really experiment with your success. I've tried a million things that didn't work. I tried some things that didn't work. That's why there's the story of the U-Haul truck, the black bags, the cold showers, and the dark nights, because I was experimenting. But without those experiments, I want you to understand a few things. If somebody didn't allow something to blow up in their face, we wouldn't have electricity. Somebody was willing to experiment with their success, and it benefited you. So what I want you to know is that when you lose your sense of originality, when you lose that courage to experiment with your success, you don't just rob yourself, you rob me. You rob the community at large. You rob the world who is waiting on your gifts and your talents to show up. So, above all, dare, just dare to go ahead and experiment and dare to innovate. You know, George Washington Carver found 101 ways to use the peanut. You know, some of us, we haven't found one way to use the resource we have. We haven't found one way to use the book, the computer, the laptop, the internet, the things that we just learned. Just think about this. Write this down on your sheet of paper. Write down one thing that you really know well. And just write down, just try figuring out 101 ways to use something that you already have.
That's a heck of a challenge, 101. I think I'm going to be hard-pressed for that one. But it's a good challenge. It's a good challenge. If I'm hearing you correctly, you're asking people, you're encouraging them to create value. Number one, connect with the things that you already know.
Yeah.
Find 101 ways that you can give to other people to make their lives better. And in doing so, you're going to build trust and stronger relationships. And at the end of the day, Trevor Ott's favorite phrase, at the end of the day.
At the end of the day.
You will give value to the world.
Yeah, because you can actually make a difference and make a profit. And remember, all profit does not have zeros on the end of it. So go out there, have a profitable life, have profitable relationships. You can be profitable. It doesn't mean that you have to always show up with a seven figure or eight figures in the bank. Never underestimate the value of pursuing true happiness in your relationships, in your business. If your business doesn't make you happy, doesn't matter how much money you make. It just doesn't matter. You know, your relationships, the things, the way you add value to the world, those are the things you'll be remembered for, and those are the things that you'll be most proud of. When you hear people talk about the things that they're most proud of, rarely do they say, I'm most proud of how many zeros are in my bank account. They usually talk about some experience that they had with somebody else. And you can be a part of that experience.
You can be that experience. Trevor, thank you. Thank you sincerely for the value that you have brought to the listeners today. I truly appreciate you, and I thank you so much. One thing I want to touch on briefly is, again, you know, you had made reference to robbing Peter and Paul and Mary and everybody else in order to pay things. But the one thing that I believe I know about you is that you actually didn't rob anybody. You found a way, you made a way, you innovated. So I want to share another quote right quick. This one is from Tom Robbins, the author of Still Life with Woodpecker. And he says, if you're honest, you sooner or later have to confront your values. Then you're forced to separate what is right from what is merely legal. And in America, we are full of metaphysical outlaws. So, yeah.
That's really powerful.
Yeah. But the one thing that I have observed about you is you have access, you have incredible knowledge, you have skills and abilities, but I've never seen you be a metaphysical outlaw. My observation of you is that you try to give value. Now, you're demanding, and having worked for you, you're a pain in the ass. I'm not going to lie. But I also know that you push people not to get them to do the best for you, but for them to become the best versions of themselves. And that's my whole purpose behind this podcast, is to hold the space for people to become the best versions of themselves. So because of everything that you've gone through, I mean, let's face it, dark days, cold showers, black trash bags, and U-Haul trucks, there are a lot of different ways that you could have chosen to get, quote, back up on top. But knowing you, you always knew your core value, and you always stayed true to that. So, you know, a lot of times people will go for what's easy instead of what's right. What advice would you give the people out there listening when they have to make hard choices and might have to sacrifice and might have to suffer for a little bit longer?
I think that when I make decisions, I'm rarely making decisions that are about me. I don't make decisions that are in a box. They're not isolated. I'm not bubble boy. I make decisions, and I have to think about how my decisions will affect others, both in the now, in the present, but also in the future. And it is never going to be my desire to personally make a decision that benefits me and knowingly harms another person. And if I have to choose between my own well-being over somebody else being harmed, then I'm never going to choose my well-being, because I don't believe that we have to harm others to have a good life. And I'm never going to believe that. And in my own raising, I've been in many, I lived in a lot of foster cares growing up, and I have run across, I had foster parents who were in the system because of the money it would generate. And then I had foster parents who, they could never be paid enough for the work that they did. And things turn out very badly when you have the wrong intention of heart. You can't sustain any type of benefit with a wrong intention. And so the question becomes is, do you want sustainable benefits in your life? I'm not saying that you can't get a quick hit and what looks like some immediate success. The problem is you'll never be able to sustain it. And every time that we see somebody operate with the wrong intention of heart, it always comes tumbling down. And it's one thing when we see somebody hit a couple of rough spots, but you know they have the right intention, and you keep pulling for them anyway. But it's a whole nother ball game when they fall and they have the wrong intentions. And we're all thinking, throw away the key, throw away the key. And at the end of the day, you know, you only need two words to really make quality decisions. Those two words would be people matter. People matter. And if you always keep that at the forefront of your mind, I think you'll be empowered to make better decisions. And I'll say this. I got a chance the other day to think about the butterfly and the caterpillar. And I really love the story of the butterfly and the caterpillar, but I realized that most people tell the story wrong in this way.
I want to hear it. I want to hear your version.
Most times when you hear the story about the butterfly and the caterpillar, you hear about this caterpillar who goes into a cocoon, and they go into a transformation, and through that transformation, they become a butterfly. And now the butterfly is beautiful. And they talk about how beautiful the butterfly is and how beautiful the transformation is. And I disagree with whether or not the butterfly is beautiful.
Why is that?
Two things. A butterfly and a caterpillar operate in the same space, in the same place, but the only thing that changes is their perspective.
Whoa. Say that again.
So a butterfly and a caterpillar, they operate in the same space, in the same place. The only thing that changes is their perspective. So I decided to go ahead and study caterpillars. Well, caterpillars at their inception are almost completely blind. They can barely see. And they can barely tell the difference between night and day. And they crawl around on the ground and they spend the majority of their time consuming, just eating and consuming. That's the majority of their time. So they're half blind and clearly they're starving, just like us. You know, we're looking for new information. You know, we're starving, just like your kids. They're blind. And then they are going through these things called end phases. And the end phase is that the wings were always on the inside of the butterfly anyway.
Wow.
Or inside of the caterpillar anyway. And through these different end phases, in each phase, a little bit more of the wings start coming out. And when they get ready to hit the final phase, they go into a cocoon. And when they go into a cocoon, here are some interesting things. Number one is the wings don't get added onto their back. So it's not like they go into a cocoon, something magical comes in and puts some wings on their back. The wings were always there. And that journey that they were on, that consumption that they were engaging in, consuming new information, consuming the world at hand, was helping them develop the wings that were on the inside. And so the first rule you got to remember is that the wings were always in them to begin with. They didn't come from the outside. And then afterwards, they come out and they emerge as a butterfly. And we call the butterfly beautiful. And I think that's wrong. It's actually the journey that's beautiful. Because without the journey, there'd be no wings. The fact that they were consuming, the fact that they lived in this world, crawled around on the ground, had a struggle, had some obstacles, faced danger, almost lost their life for my size 11 shoes. And the journey is beautiful. And I think that many times as people, and even as entrepreneurs, we don't appreciate the journey. I really love the U-Haul truck. I'll never forget them stealing all my stuff. I'll never forget sleeping on an air mattress for 6 months trying to get it back together. And by the way, when you sleep on an air mattress for 6 months, eventually it gets a little bubble on the side, and then it pops, and you got to go buy another air mattress. So you can't use an air mattress for over 6 months. Just FYI, Walmart, if y'all want to make a better air mattress.
Walmart is not a sponsor.
So, you know, this journey is beautiful. Now, remember that when it was a caterpillar, it could barely see. But once it comes out as a butterfly, its sight is 100 times greater than that of a human.
Wow.
And now it's flying over the same ground that it used to crawl on. And the only thing that's changed is their perspective. A caterpillar and a butterfly operate in the same space. The only thing that changes is their perspective. Some of us are wishing for new lives, new parents, new, you know, I wish something different happened for me. And that's not the goal of your life. That's not the purpose of your life. Is that once you accept that, learn from that, allow it to grow you. Those end phases that caterpillars go through, that's a growth phase. And once you go through that growth phase, you will eventually transform. And once you go through that transformation, you will now have a new perspective on the challenges and the life that you've been given. And it's once you've gone through that transformation, that perspective, that's what changes other people's lives. That's what changes communities. That's what those are the kind of things that change the world. And so wishing for another life or wishing that things were easier is like giving away the thing that makes you unique. We're all trying to find our purpose. You don't have to find your purpose. All you have to do is start to look more closely at what did you learn from the circumstances that you have gone through. And if you look at what you learned through the circumstances that you've gone through, you will find your purpose.
That was amazing. That was absolutely amazing. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that story. I actually have a butterfly tattooed on my
Woo!
Right shoulder.
Okay,
so.
All right now.
But wow, I love that story. Thank you for sharing it. Thank you for being an integral part of my butterfly journey over the last 2 years. We were joking about you on the podcast the other morning. It's like, yeah, Trevor called me a mess. But you know what? I came in on the back end of that conversation. I didn't hear what came before it. So thank you for helping me clean up my mess. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. So we're coming to the end of another incredible session. If you're out there and you have been listening to the messages, not just hearing the messengers, let us know. Send me an email at feelgood@elementalabundance.com. You can follow the blog at elementalabundance.com, and you can follow me on Twitter @mentaldance. And for fun, why don't you join us for Feel Good Fridays? Take a selfie of you feeling good about small blessings or just loving your life and add #AbundanceGram and then tag me @mentaldancing. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your time. Thank you for this opportunity to be part of your caterpillar journey. Until next time, I'm Mia Zachary. This is Elemental Abundance, casual conversations about quantum thinking. Blessed be.
Blessed be.